K-Mud Podcast presents. K-Mud, this is The Choice Is Yours, where we choose a topic and we discuss environmental impacts, health impacts, social impacts. And we're going to do that today for you. My name's Sheila.
I'm Danny.
And I'm Doro. And we are The Choice Is Yours.
The Choice Is Yours. We could smooth that out. We can make a little thing together. Javi, thank you, Javi, for being here. Javi thinks we need a troop name. So we're
open to suggestions.
Yeah. Let's leave it to the public. I like that.
And we're maybe one of the only shows on K-Mud where we're actually four people in the studio each time.
Mm-hmm. Big production.
Wow.
And we do a rehearsal. It's a big deal.
Choreographed dance.
Yeah. We're dancing in here the whole time. I don't know if that was clear or not.
All right. And today we are talking about salt. Salt. This is called sodium. Sodium chloride. And it's an essential mineral used as a seasoning, as you know, but also as a preservative in history, especially, and so much more. According to the Salt Institute, there are 14,000 uses. It's safe to say that salt is an integral part of all of our lives.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And this is a quote from Ernest Jones from 1912. In all ages, salt has been invested with a significance far exceeding that inherent in its natural properties. Homer calls it a divine substance. Plato described it as especially near to the gods, and we shall presently note that its importance attached to it in religious ceremonies, covenants, and magical charms.
And as Mark Kurlinski explained in his book, A World History of Salt, totally recommended. We didn't read it.
No, but I've heard so many great reviews about it.
Yeah. A World History of Salt. Salt is so common, so easy to obtain, and so inexpensive that we have forgotten that from the beginning of civilization until about 100 years ago, salt was one of the most thought-after commodities in human history.
Yes, the development of human civilization is intricately linked to the pursuit of salt. Wild animals, they bore paths to salt licks. Men followed these animals and built settlements near the salt deposits. And these settlements became cities and then nations. So the human obsession with salt has spanned thousands of years of human history across many different contexts and continents, and nearly every society in existence has some level of salt use, not only in their cuisine, but also in their medicine, their politics, their economies, and even their religious practices.
Wow. Kind of sounds like salt runs the world to me so far. I don't know. It's a big deal.
Yeah, that's funny because it's such a little thing for us nowadays.
I don't even think about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just like don't eat too much salt. You know, it's like not really a big deal, but this is
great. Well, we may come back on this.
Yes, we will.
Let's see.
So salt throughout history was given the same status as gold in the ancient world due to its scarcity and importance, making it a valuable commodity. Civilizations understood its transforming power, not only in food preservation, but in the economic and social development, like we said. Salt's journey as an ancient treasure culminates in the heart of ancient Rome, where it was cherished under the name Sodium Solaris.
Yeah, in ancient Rome, sodium solaris, that was the sun salt, was critical to the empire's success. Its applications were numerous, ranging from enhancing the flavors of gastronomic pleasures to preserving food supply critical for the troops' nourishment, obviously, during times of war. More than just a condiment, sodium solaris became a symbol of riches and power, influencing trade routes and economics over the ancient world.
During the Middle Ages, the ancient sanctity of salt slid toward superstition. The spilling of salt was considered ominous, and after spilling salt, the spiller had to cast a pinch over their left shoulder because the left side was thought to be sinister, and this is where thought that a place where evil spirits tended to congregate.
Mm. And a soldier's pay, which consisted in part of salt, came to be known as the salarium argentum, from which we derive the word salary. Interesting.
Wow. Mm.
A soldier's salary was cut if he was not, quote, worth his weight in salt. And this is a phrase that came into being because the Greeks and Romans often bought slaves with salt as well.
Well, that may become the word of the month on the newsletter. Solarium Argentum.
That's a good one. That's a nice ring to it.
Anyway, during the age of exploration, salt was especially important as a food preservative, a critical feature of marine voyage. How do you say that?
Marine voyage.
Salt, with its extraordinary capacity to limit microbial development and prevent spoiling, proved a valuable ally for maritime explorers in sustaining food throughout long sea voyages. Its importance in preserving food over this lengthy sea trip not only helped explorers stay healthy, but also provided the groundwork for the global flow of cultures, ideas, and commodities. And colonization.
Yes, that was, there's something missing there. Yeah.
Yeah. So essentially, salt helped power the exploration and expansion of civilizations.
And the salt tax helped dissolve the power of governments as well. For centuries, the French people were forced to buy all their salt from royal depots. The gabelle, or the salt tax, was so high during the reign of Louis XVI that it became a major grievance and eventually helped ignite the French Revolution. As late as 1930, in protest against the high British tax, tax on salt in India, Mahatma Gandhi led a mass pilgrimage of his followers to the seaside to make their own salt. Such an amazing, peaceful protest, right?
Oh, yeah.
I love that.
So how did we develop this insatiable thirst for salt, and why is it that we now fear salt as being dangerous for health? And furthermore, what role does salt truly play in our health and well-being?
Okay. How does salt come from the earth and reach your table?
Okay, so at one time, almost all the salt used in commerce was produced from the evaporation of seawater, and sea salt still is a staple commodity in many maritime countries, like my own France, where I have only known sea salt. It's truly, actually, we'll talk more about the French salt a little later. Apart from France, it's true especially where the climates are dry and the summers are long.
But nowadays, there are several ways to produce the different salt forms, and those methods vary and have evolved over time. The location and method of salt production are contingent on the type of salt that's being manufactured. So the process of collecting and manufacturing salt and its different variations is more complicated than you may think.
So here is a little economic story that proves to us again that our capitalist world is pure nonsense. Okay, so the United States is the 8th largest exporter of salt in the world, and its biggest clients are Canada, China, Germany, Mexico, and Belgium.
So is it because we have like an excess of salt or what? What's going on?
Nope. Oh. The U.S. is also the world leading importer of salt, right?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, yeah?
Yeah, so the U.S. exports $2 million worth of salt, but
$200 million.
But imports $600 million.
Okay.
That's like
craziness.
Yeah, sounds like a plan. So obviously this story is telling us that a lot of salt is being moved around the world using gasoline, creating contamination on, you know, the way for no practical reason. It's just, you know, another illogical economic strategy.
Yeah, obviously. But yeah, it's the same for most products that we consume. We know that. We talk about it in The Choice Is Yours regularly. So more specifically about salt, do you want some names?
Yes. Give
it to us.
Okay, so who are the companies profiting from the salt business in the U.S.? Be ready, because it is surprising. In 2003, the leading companies were Samsung.
What?
Walmart.
Ugh.
And IKEA.
Wow.
They were at the forefront of shipping salt in the U.S. I don't understand.
Yeah,
if somebody knows, call us towards the end of the show.
So bizarre.
And that's in 2023. That was recently.
Yeah. Right?
Incredible. Yeah.
Okay. So we're going to go back to one of our main questions here. How do they produce and extract the salt?
And what are the impacts on our environment?
So salt is made via several common methods. Let's look at them one by one.
Okay, the first one is mining. Rock salt mining happens underground, with the salt being physically dug out of the ground. Most of the salt dug out is used for keeping the roads free of ice during the winter. There's a mine in Utah, it's called Redmond, where they extract the food grade salt directly underneath the surface. Has a pink undertone, just like Himalayan salt.
All right. So that does mean that mining rock salt doesn't use chemicals or water in this process. So the biggest environmental impact is the use of the trucks and all of the machinery. And this is also mainly used for salting the roads.
But in comparison, the second mining technique he was talking about, solution mining, to make the white salt, it has a huge impact. Surface and groundwaters may be affected by discharges of contaminated water. The air can be affected by emissions of particulate matter and substances. And subsidence of surrounding terrain can affect inhabited area.
White salt, refined salt, table salt, or cooking salt, it's all the same thing. And it's originally produced from either salt mines or seawater. We'd like to take a minute to add a quick note here to make you aware that when you see the word refined on a label of any food, a red flag should go up. That one little word is telling you that the food has been processed. So a food that's been refined has also been altered from its original state. So as in the case of the refined salt, what started out as a beneficial mineral is quickly transformed into an altered state. It's been chemically cleaned and stripped of natural healing minerals, which in the end reduces its initial natural nutrients.
Yeah.
And who knows what's been added.
Right.
And very often it's really hard to know what has been added.
It's not on the ingredients list, that's for sure.
Very often, yeah. So here is what happens. Before refined salt hits the shelves of your local grocery store, it's dried in high heat above 1200 degrees Fahrenheit. Okay, when you hear that, you have to say energy, like so much energy is being used in that process, right? That excessive heat alters the natural chemical structure of the salt. To make matters worse, during the drying process, manufacturers add anti-caking agent, so the end product will pour and flow freely. That's cool. Okay, we like the salt that pour freely, but these anti-caking agents are dangerous chemicals like ferrocyanide and aluminosilicate.
Yeah, they sound scary. Stay away from that. Yeah. And along with these anti-caking agents, iodine is also added to refined salt. And why is that? So in the U.S., it started in 1924. At that time, many people were experiencing iodine deficiencies, which can lead to goiters and thyroid disease. Today, though, it is easier and recommended to get iodine from whole foods like saltwater fish and dairy.
Back to the whole foods.
Yes.
Always comes back to the whole foods.
And so are there any downside to iodine in the salt?
So in one study, after 21 days of the use of iodized salt, 84% of the subjects had an iodine excess. So we conclude that prolonged use of this iodized salt exposes the population to the risk of thyroid disorders. Iodine excess can produce some of the same symptoms as iodine deficiency, such as goiter, that's an enlarged thyroid gland. And thyroid gland inflammation and thyroid cancer are also increased. Overall, table salt is not pure. Rather, it's 97.5% sodium chloride and 2.5% chemicals.
Yeah, so consuming too much of the salt can cause excess fluid in your body tissues and lead to various health issues. And despite table salt having little in common with natural salt, this is the type most people use to flavor their home-cooked foods, and most food manufacturing companies dump into their packaged products. Even sweet foods that don't taste salty are loaded with refined salt and sodium. Manufacturers use it to preserve food and enhance flavor. Unfortunately, more than 75% of sodium in the average American's diet is coming from processed foods. So even if you don't think you're eating refined salt, you probably are.
Yeah. Without debate, there is far too much sodium in packaged food. Aside from the high sodium content, though, it's best to stay away from processed packaged foods altogether. Mm-hmm. That's because along with salt, they are loaded also, right, with high fructose corn syrup and other dangerous food additives that can be detrimental to health.
Himalayan salt.
All right.
Okay, we're going to the tune.
All right. Nobody wants table salt anymore. Yeah, so let's go directly to Himalayan salt.
Okay. Let's dive into this one. It's a mine salt. It comes from Pakistan at the foot of the Himalayan mountains.
It's called the purest salt on earth because it's said to be uncontaminated with modern day toxins and pollutants. Yeah, right. I see it. Like it's in a mine. It's underneath the soil for a million years or whatever that is.
800 million years.
Thank you.
Thanks, Lawrence.
So all our contaminants that we created in this last 150 years just don't in it.
Yeah, yeah.
Super cool. Another benefit of Himalayan salt is that it contains lower amount of sodium than table salt. Plus, it also contains small amounts of minerals such as iron, potassium, magnesium, and calcium. In fact, 16% of the Himalayan salt is naturally occurring trace minerals.
That's amazing.
Yeah,
that's a big
right?
That 16%,
is, yeah.
That's a lot.
Yeah. So that means only 84% is sodium chloride compared to the table salt. You remember that we said that was 97%.
Yeah, so doctors say regular consumption of pink Himalayan salt can help balance electrolytes, balance the body's pH level, support nutrient absorption, and eliminate toxins. Aside from the health benefits, this type of salt is a bit coarser and offers a strong flavor. A little goes a long way in terms of pleasing your taste buds.
But watch out, because we have discovered in our research that there is fake pink Himalayan salt out there. There's companies, you know, who are jumping on the bandwagon of this, like, you know,
natural,
and they're adding pink dye to other salts and then reselling them as pink Himalayan salt because there are no federal restrictions to stop them from doing that.
Yeah, and if you want to determine if your Himalayan salt is fake, look for signs like an unnatural, overly bright pink color, a lack of natural crystal formations, being too hard or not fragile enough, a suspiciously low price because they are one of the more expensive salts in the store, so that's kind of a good tip off, and an inconsistent color throughout the salt crystals.
Yeah, you may have noticed, right, that the salt found in the supermarket, the Himalayan salt, is often in the gourmet section, and it's priced much higher than the other salts. The demand for pink salt has reached a point where buyers are willing to pay a premium. But accordingly to a report by The Times in 2016, an average miner in Pakistan earns less than $10 a day for working 89 hours in harmful working conditions without any insurance or safety prerequisite. In the same report, a miner has also stated that apart from low pay, they regularly witness death.
Yeah, tragic.
Wow, less than a dollar an hour. I thought I had it bad. That's rough.
Yeah, horrible.
The carbon footprint of pink salt is naturally high because it's exported to nooks and corners of the world. From a fine dining restaurant in Australia to a top-tier deli in Europe, Himalayan pink salt has made its presence by traveling 6,000 to 11,000 kilometers. This makes its food miles quite high. Most responsible consumers in this day and age prefer to rely on local produce or condiments and spices that don't necessarily have to travel across several seas and mountains. Besides, where there's plenty of Himalayan pink salt and the K-Raw salt mine, once it's done, it's done. And I read something that took 800 million years to make, and in 500 years, it could be gone.
Wow.
So it seems like we'll just keep mining it until, that's pretty soon in the span of history.
Maybe we could at least just keep this Himalayan salt for food and not make lamps out of it.
Oh, what a thought. We don't want to make home decor out of the most vital resources. What a thought. Let's pass that one up the line. Besides Himalayan pink salt is hand mined and extracted by blasting the mine. So you kind of get the drift. It emits greenhouse gases and pollutes the land. And all of this for what, you wonder? Well, we kind of do too.
Yes. So salt mining has significantly worse environmental impacts than solar evaporation of sea salt for a whole host of reasons. Mining operations often involve significant land disruption and degradation and can require the clearing of forested land. So this can lead, obviously, to habitat destruction, loss of biodiversity, and changes in local ecosystems, and reduce carbon sequestration.
As with any mining industry, there is always a risk of collapse, obviously, and this carries its own environmental implication. For example, maybe some of you remember in 1994 in New York, the Red Stuff salt mine. It collapsed. It was the largest salt mine in North America.
And consequently, both the availability and quality of local water supplies were greatly affected, while the release of hydrogen sulfide and methane gases reduced air quality for locals and sparked several dangerous gas flares. In the years since, subsidence caused by the collapse has continued in residential and commercial areas, and high levels of salination in the groundwater remain a problem in some areas.
Frightening.
Awful.
Yeah, that's terrible.
All right, now that we're done with mining, we talked about everything.
We're dancing in here as well, if you forgot.
Yeah, let's move on.
Let's move on to sea salt.
Yes. Okay.
Okay.
So sea salt is also harvested from the ocean, but that can be done in a few different ways.
One of the ways is by solar evaporation. There are shallow artificial basins that use the sun's heat to evaporate the seawater, leaving salt crystals behind. The salt is then raked out, and this method is often used in warm climates with low precipitation.
KMUD is a community radio station in the Redwood region of Northern California. Donate to support people-powered radio at kmud.org.
Listening to The Choice Is Yours. We're talking about salt.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. Okay. So whether it's from salt marshes or salt flats, these areas allow the sun and wind to naturally evaporate seawater. The salt concentration increases until it's ready to harvest.
The salt can also be harvested from seawater by boiling the water over high heat to evaporate the liquid and leave the salt behind. However, some say this method uses too many resources and boils out the beneficial materials.
And there is another technique, which is the dehydrator. The seawater is concentrated, then put in a dehydrator or low oven heat at 80 degrees until the salt crystals form. The crystals can then be removed and dried further, but you can imagine that it uses way more energy than solar evaporation.
And after harvesting, the salt is usually washed, drained, cleaned, and refined.
So if you've ever had sea salt, then you know there is a huge texture difference when compared to traditional table salt. Sea salt is often less ground, meaning that the salt flakes are larger. This type of salt is made by evaporating seawater and usually contains some amount of trace minerals like potassium, iron, and zinc. While sea salt is definitely a better choice than refined table salt, it's still not the best. That's because of the pollutants in our oceans. Our oceans have become dumping grounds for toxic poisons like mercury and much more. Just like pollution has affected our fish supply, sea salt can also contain trace amounts of heavy metals like lead and mercury.
And even microplastic.
Oh yeah. There's that word.
Sea salt has more nutrient, but it may have microplastic. Great. Difficult choice we have to make, really.
Okay, another option of salt out there is kosher salt. It was originally used for Jewish religious purposes. It was used to remove blood from the surface of meat, making the meat kosher. This type of salt has a flaky, coarse structure that easily draws out the blood. And while kosher salt is similar to table salt because they both originate from either underground mine deposits or evaporated seawater, the two salts are not the same.
And aside from the larger grains and different texture, kosher salt is not iodized and usually doesn't contain anti-kicking agents. And if manufacturers do add those anti-kicking agents to kosher salt, it is in much smaller amounts than compared to table salt. So
interesting.
A little better.
Okay, what about Celtic salt? Mm.
Well, apparently Celtic salt originates from Brittany, France, near the Celtic Sea. It has a grayish hue and retains its moisture. So no matter how you store this type of salt, it will always be moist to the touch.
Oh, yeah, that's the one I call fleur de sel.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Despite the texture difference, many health experts compare Celtic salt to pink Himalayan salt because of its nutritional content. Celtic salt also contains a variety of trace minerals and is lower in sodium than regular table salt. In fact, studies show Celtic salt has the least amount of sodium than any of the other salt, and it has the higher amount of key minerals such as calcium and magnesium. But remember that Celtic salt is just a seawater salt, meaning that it has all the contaminants from the ocean.
Yeah. Okay.
All of them, I guess, including microplastic.
And with similar nutrients, it may not come as a surprise that Celtic salt is stated to offer the same health benefits as Himalayan salt.
Oh.
Well, I think it does come down to the harvesting methods of the Celtic sea salt, and it is harvested from the coastal regions of Brittany, France, like we said, using traditional sustainable methods. This process involves collecting salt from the clay ponds where seawater is evaporated using the sun and the wind. This traditional method may reduce exposure to microplastics compared to salts harvested from the ocean, the open ocean waters.
So, research has shown that sea salts can contain microplastics, like we have said, and as these particles are pervasive in our oceans. However, the concentration and presence of microplastics in sea salt will vary depending on harvesting methods and locations. And while no sea-sourced product can guarantee to be free from microplastics, selecting products from cleaner waters and responsible producers can reduce the risk.
Okay, so here is a kind of overall situation. I don't know if you heard about it. This is called freshwater salinization syndrome. Do we want to go there? Do we have time? Maybe not.
Maybe not.
Okay, so there's something, like, look into it. The fact that we're using so much salt on our roads is making the salinization syndrome.
We're getting too much salt.
Yeah, especially for the roads, not so much for the food. But
right.
The roads.
It's just environmentally, and we're getting a lot of it.
There are solutions. We could prevent the snow packs and stuff
in
differently,
other ways.
But, complicated. All right, let's go to health benefits.
All right, let's do it. So sodium, one of the major minerals that our bodies need to remain healthy. We can find it naturally in a variety of foods, but it's often common that we have it as sodium chloride, which we said is salt.
Oh, yes, salt is an inorganic compound. It doesn't come from living matter. It forms from when sodium and chloride ions come together to create those crystalline cubes, flakes, and stuff.
And although many people use the words sodium and salt interchangeably, they are not the same. Sodium is a naturally occurring mineral and nutrient. Whole foods like fresh vegetables, legumes, and fruit naturally have sodium.
Sodium is a major component of extracellular fluid. It's essential for maintaining the volume of plasma to allow adequate tissue perfusion and normal cellular metabolism. It's typically found in our blood and lymph fluid. The maintenance of extracellular fluid volume is an important physiological function of sodium within our bodies, particularly in regards to our cardiovascular health.
Yeah, one of sodium's main functions is to balance the amount and distribution of water in our bodies, playing a key role in the control of our blood pressure. You might have heard about this correlation. Your body responds to excess sodium by holding on to water to dilute the sodium. As a result, the amount of fluid and pressure increases within the blood vessels.
Similar to chloride and potassium, sodium creates specific channels in membranes of our cells, which carry out different vital tasks. For example, sodium channels help to control the amount of water that gets in and out of our cells, and it allows the transport of specific nutrients and compounds such as amino acids, glucose, vitamins, etc.
Sodium is also important to help our muscles and our heart contract. and to allow our nerve cells to carry messages between the brain and the body. So the sodium plays a role in communication between the nervous system and the muscle tissue to control muscle movement. That's kind of crazy. So before a muscle contraction occurs, sodium rushes into nerve cells, triggering the transmission of a small electrical signal. When your muscle sends this signal, your muscle fibers shorten and contract.
The body is so amazing.
I know. Yeah. I love getting into it like this. Yeah. It's so amazing. Sodium's role in skeletal muscle contraction supports your posture and allows for movement, while its role in cardiac muscle contraction maintains your heartbeat.
Yeah, it's so important.
Yeah, we need salt. We need sodium.
So the chloride ions, which is provided by the salt, they are secreted into the gastric juice as hydrochloric acid, which is vital for digestion of food and the destruction of any foodborne pathogens that show up in our stomach.
The potassium-sodium ratio is an important information. It's actually more effective than a low-sodium diet.
We're hearing that dietary potassium intake, in addition to the sodium-potassium ratio, plays a crucial role in the development of diseases typically associated, you know, now what they say with the simple excess of sodium in our modern diet.
So an example from the InterSalt study, which examined the impact of population-wide salt consumption on blood pressure, is the Yanomami indigenous people of the Brazilian rainforest, who are known for having far lower average blood pressure than the one we have around here. Their lifelong low blood pressure has been attributed to their extremely low consumption of salt, and this has been used as evidence to further support the effort to restrict salt in the American diet.
A major problem that arises from using the Yanomami as an example of the salt hypertension hypothesis is the wide variety of confounding variables that may also affect their blood pressure. The InterSalt study researchers admit that in addition to low sodium intake and high potassium intake, other factors that may contribute to the absence of hypertension and lack of blood pressure increase with age among the Yanomami people and are as follows. Their low body mass index and the almost non-existence of obesity. There are no alcohol ingestion, low ingestion of saturated fat, high ingestion of fibers, relatively high physical activity, and the several culture consequences of living in an isolated community without the psychosocial stress of civilization and without a monetary system or dependence on a job. So basically everything is different.
Okay, we have callers on the line.
Let's hear it.
Hi.
Yeah.
Well, I'm really glad you played that piece about sodium and potassium, because nobody believes me when I tell them that, because all the vitamins have equal portions of sodium and potassium, and I keep telling everybody it's 2-to-1, and the doctors say no.
Yeah, more doctors need to understand the physiological functions.
The basic ones.
Of these minerals within our bodies. I mean, this just reminds me of the show we did in the past about oils and the omega-3, omega-6 balance in the body.
Oh, yeah, the polyunsaturated oils. People think they're still good for some reason. And the other thing that's, my memory, I forgot.
I wanted to make sure I understood. Did you say every vitamins has the two?
Not every vitamins, but lots of vitamins have equal sodium and potassium.
Equal.
Right. Equal.
And so that means that if you eat also some leafy greens and some broccoli and some
potassium-rich foods.
Potassium. What else is rich in potassium? Banana.
Avocado.
Fruit, vegetables.
Yes. Yep. Legumes. Yeah,
but it's just crazy. They're selling these pills and they're telling you.
Right.
Just people don't believe you when you talk to them. Oh, and the other thing is, one time when I bought bulk sea salt at the co-op, they didn't have any more in the bin, and they gave me the bag. I got the bottom of the bag, and there's the magnesium, well, they call it magnesium silicate, but it's actually magnesium aluminum silicate. And if there's less than 2% of something, they don't have to say it on the label.
Yeah, frightening.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I love your show. Thank you.
We love you.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Bye.
And for those who didn't recognize Hope's voice, just know that she's a totally reliable person. If she says so, we just believe her because she knows way more than
exactly. us. Exactly. She's been around longer than us. She's got some insight.
Okay, we have a second caller. Hello.
Hello. Do you hear me now?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, yeah. Well, I'm finally hearing something about the two elements, sodium and potassium. And I think that it's not two equal amounts of each one. I think it's probably a lot more potassium required than sodium.
Yeah, like...
But I want to impart something that's missing in this conversation, and that is what goes down the drain is mostly sodium, because almost all the cleaning products that are used are sodium-type based, with other chemicals mixed with the sodium this and sodium that.
Yeah.
And so for 2 years, I used nothing but potassium soap, Dr. Bronner's, and my drainage cleared up from a gray, smelly effluent to a sweet smell. That's the big element that is ignored, and it's what's causing most of the pollution in the water. That's what I believe. So that's about it. I think I gave it to you all.
Yeah, you did. That's a really good point.
Okay.
And just...
Yeah, there's a lot more to it, you know.
There's always more.
Treating water in order to use that effluent, you have to actually blend it. Like your water tank has to be like a big blender to blend it up, to mix it up, so when you do... start hosing it out, pumping it out, it's nice and uniform and stays the same color longer. And so there's a lot to it. So
cool. Thank you very
much.
But
I'll be calling in more if I hear more about the difference between the sodium and the potassium. The other thing is that what people don't know is that sodium bicarbonate, which is baking soda, there's a potassium bicarbonate, you know. And then there's chloride. There's a potassium chloride salt, a substitute in potassium. And there's other potassium replacements for the sodium.
Super cool. Thank you. I always use baking soda to clean the drains in my sink and stuff, but I'm going to look for that thing.
And just reiterating what the caller said, because the what we had listened to before, the doctor explained, it's 2-to-1 ratio, 2 being potassium
to
1 sodium.
You need more potassium than sodium.
But in this modern world where we have so much excess sodium, if we're eating processed foods and such, it's even could be 3-to-4 ratio to 1.
Right.
Okay. So it's not in equal balance.
Right.
If you eat a lot of processed food, you need to eat even more veggies and fruits to balance.
Okay.
All
next
right.
Next caller.
Hello.
Hey. Good morning. It's Maureen.
Hi, Maureen.
Hi. I'm really enjoying the program and everyone that you do. Very thorough. So I haven't done the research on this, but I trust the person who told me this because I'm quite sure she did. She was a caterer. She's moved out of the area now, and I worked with her, really liked working with her. So she was saying that, actually she was giving a cooking lesson at the time, and she said that with like Himalaya salt, that's not going to raise your blood pressure. What raises your blood pressure is the anti-caking stuff in that crappy salt. So just passing that on. You know, as I say, I haven't done the research, but it sounds right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the anti-caking agents are no good.
Right.
I don't know if it's
overall,
but yeah.
And, you know,
yeah,
I marketing
know.
Really, really works. I mean, we've always used Morton salt when growing up. We didn't know this. It looks so cute, the child, the innocence of it all. If it doesn't rain, it pours. Not, you know, cute. Let's not buy into that anymore.
Yeah,
so thanks,
we know better
thanks,
now.
Gals and Javi. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Maureen.
All right, we got one more minute and one more caller. Hello. No more quota. Okay, okay, good.
Well, maybe it's time to just wrap it up then.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, we are not the experts. We did a deep dive into the subject and found out as much as we could. But we all need to continue doing our own research.
And make your own opinions about it. Because at the end of the day, maybe you really try and avoid microplastics and you want this certain type of salt, sea salt, and not going to guilt yourself about it. Or maybe it's the other way and you're trying to really
You don't care about workers in Pakistan being paid little.
Give them $1 an hour. Give me my Himalayan salt and my rock lamp. Like, choose your lane. Choose whatever you're going to.
Oh, and there's one thing we didn't talk about, this Richmond salt, which is out of Utah.
Yeah.
And to me, out of all the everything we found out, that would be the one that I'm like, oh, okay, it's mine salt, so it doesn't have all the contaminants from the world, the modern world. It comes from Utah, which is kind of
more local than
us.
Other options.
And it's not extracted with huge amount of water and everything. It's just normal mining. So it's just, okay, truck and gasoline, but nothing more than that. And it comes to your table quite raw. It doesn't go through a lot of refining process.
Yeah, yeah.
I just don't know where we find that salt. But, okay, I'll find it. Now that I know, I'm going to be looking for it.
Distributor of that salt and bring it back and let everyone know.
Richmond salt.
Yeah, and hopefully this just gave people, you know, some information to think about the decision they're making more, because we all stand in the grocery store staring at the salt like, which one is
And also, maybe don't be scared of salt and all the issues with the hypertension and stuff that our grandparents were like subjected to, because we just need more potassium.
Exactly.
And I'll stop eating processed food as much too, but that's just a given. You know?
Yeah, whole foods, going back
to eat the whole foods and it's going to be
all
right.
That's our conclusion, actually.
We're going to make it.
Yeah, whole just food. Whole food.
Whole foods.
All right. Well, thanks thank you, everybody.
This has been a K-Mite podcast. To listen to other shows and more episodes of this show, find us on all the platforms where you get your podcast, and also on our website, kmud.org.